Get started.
No, all that you sent.
That's all right. No, I just bumped that up the next level. That's what I do.
But I'm that level now.
That's right. She does it.
Let's get started with the April 11 meeting of Ways and Means. Can I get approval of the minutes from March 7th and March 22nd?
I will second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So carried. Resolution 486, adopting Up County Information Services Policy. Got a motion for discussion.
Move.
Second.
Agenda.
Is
this
ready?
Yeah. So, we have Kelly, we're going to have a stakeholders meeting.
And you need this.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I get a motion to postpone this?
So moved. One month?
Yeah.
I'll make a motion to postpone for a month.
Second.
Can
I just want to make sure also that the, in terms of the stakeholders, that the comptroller's office is included. I know the comptroller's office had a bunch of suggestions, just that we make sure everybody, we need to be at the table, that's stable. Will it be a, when we talk about stakeholders, will it be, will this committee as a whole be engaged, or are we talking, yes, we'll a special meeting of Ways and Means?
Yeah,
and
I think it requires enough. I think it's going to require enough time that all the committee members should be there.
Okay, and may I ask through the chair, in terms of the executive offices, are you all comfortable with this as presented in its current form, and we're going that this is what you want to pass as is, or?
No, we're open to feedback. So I think that the conversation that was started a few months ago was never completed.
Yeah.
And there were suggested edits that I don't think made it in. So I'm fine with, I mean, if you guys want to schedule a special meeting then and invite us, otherwise I was just going to have Alan and myself scheduled with key people that wanted to give us feedback before something that formal. So it's your call. I'm open to either or, and I think both would be productive.
I don't know what happened to Did the comptroller submit written?
I don't have anything unless it went directly to the director of IT.
Oh,
hey, Alan.
Okay.
So we want to start a, like an informal kind of thing where we can like sit down with a few key people to do that and then bring it to the larger group. That would make sense to me. Or we can just hold a public meeting. It's up to you.
Yeah. Comptroller, we're talking about the IT policy, the security policy.
Oh, yeah.
Did you put any comments in writing? I know you had a lot of suggestions.
I don't recall.
Okay. So we're discussing whether it would be a special meeting of Ways and Means with invited, and it would be open to anyone, or whether the exec's office would do a more of a working group prior to a Ways and Means meeting. But I think we need to get it where it's moving forward, and I know that it's dense. I mean, there's a lot services going through, which is why I'm asking if, like, you know, I don't know if the exec's office wants to do a pass at it quick, because I know there were places where it wasn't conforming. You know, that was much of what your comments were, you know, where it was obviously, because it's taken from another, did you say a state, or I'm trying to remember.
It was another county.
Maryland, or?
Virginia?
Fairfax County. So some of the language was clearly not related to our form of government. I don't know if you want to do...
Yeah.
Like take a jump start first, and then I do think we should be aggressively moving towards completion.
Yes, I'll take a pass at it in the next 2 weeks, and if you want to do a special where we're discussing it in 2 weeks, I can commit to that, Alan.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd be happy to.
Okay.
All right. All those in favor, postponing them up.
Aye.
Okay. Resolution 78, amending.
I'll move it.
Second.
One second.
Discussion.
So this is a match with municipalities. Are there restrictions of what they are allowed to use this for? Like, does it have to be only projects that are like municipal solar and EV charging, or? I don't know who I'm asking this question to. I'm just going to ask the ether. Or maybe you know?
It's fairly broad, but it is municipal. But we did add the EV charging, as you see.
But can they use it for a residential, to be
municipal.
Only the municipal
yes,
use?
Correct.
And municipal building for solar and municipal
correct.
Access EV chargers.
Correct.
Okay, just wanted to confirm that.
Yep.
Thank you.
I mean, just for myself, I don't know the sponsor would have to speak to it, but in terms of the EV charging, I understood it to be municipal EV charging, but not necessarily municipal access. It could be used for a municipal fleet only, or it could be public.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's helpful.
I mean, I think municipalities are going to need both in short order. So it's so anything.
Right.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. 101.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. Chair Bartels, then.
So this was held a month with a series of questions. My understanding is we haven't gotten any answers to any of those questions. I don't know if maybe we can postpone for the week in anticipation.
Well, I guess just a response to that.
Okay with the postponement for the week. I did get the answers, but Amanda just got back from vacation,
yep.
So I want to give her a little time to review it. So, but the week is fine. One change that will be forthcoming is we're going to pull one of the vehicles out of the discussion.
If I could ask that the answers once Deputy Executive Wallace reviewed them, if the answers could be distributed prior to the next meeting, just so that we don't show up at the meeting and then have to spend on a session day, spend a ton of time.
I think you'll get them tomorrow.
That's
hopefully.
Great.
They're already out there. We were just reviewing them. That's why I think back to Natalie today.
Legislative morning.
I thought we were going to get the fleet manager in here too to
we
give
were.
A good rundown. The fleet manager.
She was at Public Works.
Was she? Did
yeah.
She?
There was a discussion about her coming away to me.
Okay.
She
did she explain why
me.
None of this was budgeted for? You know, pre fleet manager, pre charter, 90% of vehicles were budgeted for and weren't bonded for. And it seems as though, and I talked to you earlier, you mentioned that, well, I didn't know that was the only vehicle. So I hope it doesn't seem like targeting at that point, that we're only taking all those vehicles. We just found one person or one entity not to give the vehicle to. I thought we were going to do, is it going to be more than one vehicle?
No, it was the only vehicle that wasn't in the capital program as passed in the budget. So the other vehicles, there was EMS vehicles that were included in an amendment to the budget, and then there was the additional human rights vehicle, which wasn't in the original budget, and that's why I thought it was flagged by this committee.
That was just an example given.
The rest of them were budgeted for.
In the capital.
Yes. We've been doing the capital for over a decade.
But not the budget itself. When you say budgeted.
It's part of the budget. Capital's part of the budget. It's not an operating.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. Wasn't in the
yeah, item. We're not paying cash.
Yeah.
We're not paying cash.
And
correct.
So I just think, it just seems as though there wasn't a lot of, I mean, when you have 40 vehicles all at once that wasn't in the presented budget, besides being mentioned in the capital budget, I just think, like I said, going back pre-charter, it was actually in the budget. Like, when we're approving the budget, they were saying we're going to have, there were discussions during the budget cycle about each and every vehicle. We could even talk to the department heads that were getting them. This just seems out of nowhere, a big group all bonding for, and it just seemed like everyone that asked for something got it. I think there was one department that went from two vehicles historically to five. I just thought there should be a lot more discussion, and it should probably be done last December.
I mean, it was in the budget. It's the capital program is part of the budget, and the associated debt service is anticipated as part of the operating budget to purchase the vehicles. We do it through capital so we can capitalize the assets because they last more than a few years. They're major assets.
It could be
the reason why we do it in, we go out for bonding on major purchases that are asset, they're capital purchases, is so we can provide services while also making major purchases. If we manage our debt service in such a way that we honestly have and keep it low enough, then there's a net benefit that we're able to do more than just one thing, right? Like, we can provide services at a high level, and we can also purchase the assets that we need. So
that argument doesn't work right now.
It does, because we're actually collecting more in interest in the bank than we would be paying on the debt service for these.
Could you show me those numbers?
So 4.66% is what we're collecting on our deposits, and the last time we went out for bonding, I think it was 3.6 or 3.7.
4.5, I think, is what we have on the
bands. On the long one? On the bands now?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's only 1.16. Excuse me.
But my ultimate point is it should be in the department's budget.
That's how it was done historically.
And it's
historically pre-charter, it's been 15 years. Mm-hmm. And we've been operating in a certain way that has proven efficient.
Better after the charter.
And if you look at our finances, they're significantly better, and there's
I'm
no question
about
on that.
Specific thing. Bond vehicles not being talked about in the budget process, being lumped into one lump sum and only mentioned in the capital plan.
Okay.
Does the budget director agree that we shouldn't have the vehicles inside the department's budget?
Can I ask a question? Sorry. Am I up?
Before we go, Joe, just. If you can just hold tight for a second here. I know where the confusion is coming from, and it's a semantics game right now, so let's sit around and go.
No, it's okay if you want to.
Well, so this is the same problem we had last year. We've got a capital plan, which is a wish list of what we're going to do with the money and what purchases we're going to be making, but we don't actually put them into a specific line. We talked about this last year during budget time of actually, and I think it was the chair who brought this up, is we should have a capital budget that's actually locked in, that says these purchases, and they're in the budget itself. Not moving money around from fund balances, you know, the assigned or unassigned fund balances. This would actually be done. So I understand what Joe's saying, and I actually agree with Mr. Maloney about this, is where you are going to approve something and it's based on the bandwidth. We've had that conversation also last year. This is all great that we have these things in our plan, but if we don't have the bandwidth to complete them, then it's sort of pointless. But moving in, once we know we're going to be able to do that in 2023, 2024, put them actually into the budget as because we're actually going to do them. That's sort of what I think is...
Into the operating budget?
Put them in there to assign the money to the purchase. So instead of it being
but
in...
the operating budget charge would be to debt service if you're bonding for the purchase. It wouldn't be for the individual vehicle.
There's difference of agreement of whether we should be bonding, so that's a different subject.
I guess I don't think it is. Like, we've been operating under a certain way. I get that you want to spend down the fund balance on one-time purchases, but that hasn't been a robust discussion around whether the legislature at large or whether the chief budget people also agree. I think there's certain purchases that would make sense for pay-go or pay-as-you-go, but just to start running it down, running down our cash balance in order to make... So what is it?
I wasn't suggesting that. But saying put it into the actual budget. This is in a plan. It's not a
No, this is a project and a resolution that has specific purchases behind it for the vehicles. So there is a list of vehicles and where they're going by department.
And they're in that department budget.
No, they're in the capital budget.
Well, that's...
Okay.
Budgetary
practice.
I'll leverage the Ronco in this.
I was just going to say, I think that you can have the discussion about the vehicles during budget time with the department heads without actually having it listed in the operating budget. I think that that's, you know, you could talk, you know, and I think that that is what most of us are looking for, or what most of the folks who have spoken are looking for, is to have the conversation before the budget's passed rather than after the budget's passed on these vehicles. Because I'm about one of the vehicles, I would have been upset to find that out during
that's
the budget.
That's totally doable, but I don't want to change how we're accounting for these purchases within the budget.
And
right?
I also...
Operating versus capital, they're both essential to the county's operation, and I don't... Like, giving you guys a full list by department totally makes sense.
I also think that it's a conversation that we should have on bonding versus purchasing, and I'm personally of the opinion that, you know, for things that have a useful life, like vehicles and buildings and bridges and culverts, it makes sense to bond even when we have a robust fund balance, when we're making more on the investments than we are on the debt. At the point where that flips, which I believe is coming, mm-hmm. then it's going to start making sense for us to pay cash.
100%.
And spend down the debt.
It sounds
spend
like we're 0.16 points away, potentially, we're getting very close, where we should discuss on large scale, not ones and two
yeah.
purchases, but large scale purchases where we would avoid long-term debt service increases.
I have one more thing and then I'm done. I also hope that in a week, if we're still having issues with certain vehicles here or there, that we move the emergency services vehicles, because that's, you know, we want to get those out on the street between the EMS vehicles and the police vehicles.
Mr. Roberts.
Yeah, Chris, those 40 vehicles are in the capital budget. Are they budgeted for a particular year or just in part of the five-year plan?
No. For 23. Yeah, I'm just thinking on the out years, we're not going to be so specific because we're going to look, you know, your first few years are always going to be more accurate when you're doing a five-year projection, six-year projection, so it's for 23.
So do we, obviously it's for 23, right?
Yeah.
But do we know what vehicles we're going to bond next year or in the year
not
after?
Not yet, because we still will deal with accidents, crashes, and different things that will cause us to move up certain department purchases that weren't scheduled, like due to mileage or something like that.
Other than an accident, do we have an idea what we're going to do?
Yeah, annually we do have an idea, yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Camp.
Yeah, so my question is this. So when was the list for these vehicles established? Was it established during the budget preparation?
Usually
and
include the end when we're finalizing capital.
But there, it was before the budget, so we knew at that time that we would be looking for these roughly 40. I'm not saying exactly, of course, because
yeah.
we're going to have issues between budget time and now, but, you know, say the vast majority of these were known prior to the budget, right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
And I think that's a really simple thing that we can overcome in the next budget is let's have that budget, these cars that we're going to replace these vehicles,
right.
and some of the things are very expensive, beforehand.
Totally.
Simple. That ends it, right?
Yes,
you know?
I agree.
Okay,
yep.
Thanks. Thank you.
Sure. Yep.
Okay.
I think it's a good idea.
Thanks. One of the other things that came up at the other meeting was with regard to the sheriff's vehicles, the fact that none of them are EVs or even partial EVs, so we talked about and...
Three out of ten are.
Always.
The administrative vehicles, I believe, they're going to EVs. They're not going to EVs for patrol vehicles.
Right.
Right. I see sheriff vehicles, 10 vehicles are for sheriff patrols and detectives.
It's not noted on there, but it's 3 out of 10.
7 and 3. Man.
Okay. Seven and three. Okay. So for the seven that aren't, I guess the and it would take a longer discussion than right now to really understand, because looking at this, I have no sense. In the capital, it says 7 year lifespan on vehicles is what we're estimating, and I don't know if that's how it holds for the sheriff's vehicles. I'm guessing that they
shorter,
get much more mileage. Yeah. So
it's more mileage, and you also don't want to run them past a certain mileage because you're running them at speeds that you wouldn't run a sedan at.
So given what we're hearing about the transition to full electric nationally, what we're finding out again, I think that we should be really cautious. If there's, again, none of the mileage is provided here, but I do hope that we're looking really closely, and if we're able to delay even a fraction of any non-electric purchases 1 year, it gets us closer to buying an electric vehicle. I mean, I don't know if anyone's following the news, but based on what the EPA is about to issue, you know, we may be moving at much more hyper-fast speeds in this transition than we thought even a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that's being considered. My second question, my question is, with the 7 year life, are these bonds, when we do bond for vehicles, are they lumped in with our typical 18 year bonds, even though they only have a 7 year life?
So, Chair Bartel, the way that this has been handled in the past, the former commissioner would take all of the items that were being bonded,
mm-hmm.
roll them into one bond, and average out the useful life of all the items that were in to be bonded,
mm-hmm.
and that would create the total period for the bond issue.
Average them out by value, and
by value.
Okay. And that's how we end up with 18, because some things are 7 and
some things are 30.
Some things are 30. So, I mean, that's another thing to think about, is what implication rolling in big seven-year purchases might have on
the bonding, since it changes our useful life, right? I mean, when you put in a bunch of seven, it's going to lower. You might end up with 20-year bonding instead of 18. So I don't know. It's worthy of thinking, and I do think we should. It'll help to see this by departments at budget time, but I do think I recall those days that Legislator Maloney is talking about, and I think it actually they extended past Legislator Ronk. You might remember past the transition into a charter government, where we used to actually have the vehicles in departments and in the budget lines, not just in the capital. The capital, I think, happened a little later.
Yeah, I mean, we've been bonding for vehicles since I've been here, and I believe that they've been in the capital plan. I can tell you that it's always been a discussion mm-hmm. about bonding vehicles,
yeah.
And the compelling thing to me is that, you know, when the interest is exceeding the debt, you know, you might as well bond it for the useful life. I mean, you know, otherwise you're just lighting taxpayer money on fire.
Which I'm sure we've
done.
You weren't just here.
Thanks. I just to Chair Bartels's point on holding off with the, you know, potential for, you know, impending, you know, requirements on EVs. I would hesitate to do that on law enforcement vehicles, emergency response vehicles, because, you know, many times when the federal, state, and local governments pass these regulations, they're going to exempt, emergency vehicles in some way, shape, or form. I know my conversations with the sheriff and the senior staff at the sheriff's office is when they come up with a patrol pursuit rated EV that they have faith in putting their officers on the line in it, they're open to buying them, but they don't exist yet.
That's it, Walter.
Thanks. So one is a future talk. If the conversation is how the next budget should look in terms of these fleet vehicles, it seems smart to combine the conversion goals of green vehicles in that plan. So when you know what the upcoming vehicles are, it's also how are those proposed vehicles for the next year tying into the conversion of more green vehicles. But for this, we talked last month about exploring for those vehicles that cannot be green at this point, leasing, recognizing that right now, given the environmental crisis, anything that uses fossil fuel that's going to have a life of 6 to more years, we should think very carefully about. I know that you, I think Amanda or Chris, I don't remember which one, said you were going to look into, re-look into, because I know it was looked into several years ago, but re-look into the potential of leasing some of these. Was that done?
In the last 2 weeks? No, it hasn't been done in the last 2 weeks. But it's something.
Okay, just from when we postponed it last month, that was brought up, is to look at that. Is that possible to still look at that?
I think a full examination of a lease tends to take development of a scope.
Yep.
We used an RFP, response time. So it's typically a longer process.
We looked at it twice, I think, in the last 6 years at doing fleet leasing program, and it didn't balance out. It cost us more than it would have to continue to acquire and maintain and repair them ourselves. I guess the other point I would make is if we want to increase the goals in terms of our green fleet purchasing, that is a county policy. The thresholds are set by the legislature.
I'm not saying we increase our goals. I'm saying
okay.
We tie in those goals to each of the proposed changes.
We've been doing that for years, and we've, on the fleet side, on our side, we've exceeded.
I understand that. I'm saying when it's being shared with the legislature and they see what the proposed capital plan is, to see how that is.
Got
but,
it.
You know, I will say, as we move to less reliance on fossil fuel, the argument of it's more expensive to convert will the environmental will always lose, right? It's more expensive to close down and not use a nuclear power plant than to convert it to something environmental. So, like, that's not the, for me, the argument that I'm going with. If it's a little more expensive to lease it, because the service is done outside than inside, but it, yet it's a shorter term lease, which then allows time to have a green vehicle, like, I think it's, that's worth exploring and not just doing a dollar for dollar comparison, because the impact of these fossil fuel cars that we would still have in 5-6 years is, you can't put a dollar sign on that. So
another point I made a couple of weeks ago was looking into maybe certain people not having vehicles. Obviously, we need certain vehicles. You know, I don't want a police officer jumping in his own car or her own car. But I think there needs to be a conversation on, you know, mileage or a stipend or gas card, whatever. But does every, do we need this many vehicles in our fleet? I mean, we forget sometimes that government is a business with compassion. But don't forget, it's a business, and I just feel like we forget that a lot, and we're just throwing these vehicles out all over the place. And I think if you asked our constituents and went through what kind of approach they'd like to see us have, especially down the road if times do get tough, you know, we just seem to be. And I think it's time to have honest conversations. And you know what? A lot of these jobs are good, great retirement, great health care, fringe benefits are good. Some of these salaries are pretty damn good too. And the idea that, oh, you can't jump in your own car and drive somewhere, I think there's a lot of those vehicles that we could just be done with, and I think we should. I think it's the right thing to do, and at least have that conversation. We should go through the entire fleet and be like, nope, 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 nope. But probably won't ever do that.
Jennifer Dawson.
Well, just to follow on that for a second, I mean, I think, and that may be something that should be done at Public Works, an in-depth analysis, you know, and a sharing with the legislature of the fleet, and particularly the take-home policy, I mean, and the intersection, because those are two different things. I think there's one thing about a fleet that you come to work and you drive the fleet for while you're at work. It's another, and I don't have the answers, I'm sure the executive staff does, of how many vehicles are actually going home with employees. That's a very different deal, and there's a benefit associated with that. I'm wondering, the tax incentive, the $7,500 tax incentive on green vehicles, is it something that we do or don't realize when we purchase for municipal?
I don't know if that's changed recently because some of the solar,
that's what I was wondering too.
But we have been in the position in the past to use certain DEC NYSERDA rebates for those purchases. But, you know, not to bring up the leases again, but we did particularly look at, with a lens for green vehicles, when we went through and priced leasing last time, and included the fact that leasing entity would be able to take that tax credit, and it still didn't pencil for us at that time.
I'm curious to find out. Mm-hmm. Like, I know things are changing fast, that would be good to know. But I also think one other thing that's going to be interesting to play out is the life expectancy of an electric vehicle versus a gas-powered vehicle. You know, just there's you know, they're moving parts, but there are less moving parts. There are less parts that get corroded. There's no fluids moving through. Basically, you're dealing with brakes and tires, and that's basically it. You know, so that's something to think about too. In terms of, it's all very new. Like, we're all going to learn this together, but that may also change how long we have vehicles. And that's another reason why I think, and I hope, and I assume that we're strictly enforcing our take-home policy, because the concept with the take-home policy, you know, in drafting it, was that we extend the life of the vehicles when they're only being used for work purposes, when they're staying here and workers are coming and getting into them, driving them for work, and then driving their own vehicles home. You're limiting the amount of miles that they're being utilized outside of the work environment, so, and thereby extending their useful life as vehicles for county use.
Mm-hmm. Cedar Rock.
It was like several speakers ago. I'm not 100% sure what my point was back then.
Okay. <later on. laughs>
I just would like to note that we did have an extensive discussion at Public Works of the fleet with the fleet manager there to describe the situation with the pools and the individual consideration of vehicles and what justified having a vehicle assigned. With particular consideration that if the pool vehicles would not be available when a call came for a specific job that the person is doing for the county, then it did not make sense to have that person dependent upon a pool vehicle. That could probably be elaborated and brought to the full legislature, but it was an extensive discussion. It was very helpful, and I think it satisfied the all of us on the committee.
Legislator Petit.
Thank you. Just to follow up with what Legislator Nolan said is, you know, in addition to, I think there are only being three pool vehicles, so if there's a conference somewhere and folks are coming from different parts of the county, that wouldn't quite be enough. The director also mentioned that there was a significant savings in not doing mileage, which is
62 and a half, I think.
Yeah, so that's significant as well. But we did touch on the policy for taking home vehicles, and obviously if somebody's going to go beyond and use this vehicle as a personal vehicle too, there are IRS implications there. So,
there are supposed to be IRS implications, but it's self-policing.
Yeah, claiming, we ensure that.
So there's a way that we're able to, right, on the take-homes, they have a special.
I think we have a list of the individuals that have take-home vehicles. They're assessed $3 a day as a taxable benefit that is recorded in the payroll system in order to we have the IRS.
Yeah.
Reported out on the W-2. So they are paying tax for financial benefit.
Yeah. Chair Berton.
Well, I mean, and I guess this should be a further conversation again, either in, I wasn't at the Public Works meeting or the largest legislature here. I know Deputy Executive Laval talked about bringing the fleet manager here. You know, I think there's a difference between a pool vehicle and a county vehicle that's not a take-home vehicle. When the policy was created, it wasn't necessarily meaning that those were the only two things. You either had a take-home vehicle or a pool vehicle. It contemplated you could have a dedicated vehicle that you left at the county and then drove your vehicle home. Because unless you're actually like clocking in and checking out with a fingerprint, you don't know how much mileage is happening once you take a vehicle home.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are two different things, you know, having a pool vehicle. And I don't know in terms of our fleet, are we actually running the metric, the required X amount of calls out? You know, our take-home fleet policy has a very specific setup of criteria that says if you're called out X number of days from home, that would be one of the only reasons that you would be allowed to take a vehicle home. It's not about the time that you use the vehicle at work, because then you could utilize even a dedicated vehicle. But I don't know the answer to that without a fleet manager here.
I can say that the fleet manager does have the records for all the take-home vehicles. Because it was never part of the Green Fleet reporting, I haven't in the past had a lot of hands-on in that data set. However, that's something that she tracks for DPW. The sheriff's office does their own tracking of vehicles as far as take-home goes.
Just let's keep in mind we have 55 resolutions to get through, and we're 40 minutes in already. Legislator Nolan, you had your hand up, but can...
Yeah, no, it can wait to the further discussion.
Can it wait?
Yep.
Okay.
Did we make the motion to postpone?
No, that's what I'm doing now.
Oh, sorry.
Can I have
I'll
a motion
make the
to
motion
postpone?
Postpone a week.
Wait,
3 and 4.
3 and 4.
Second.
In favor?
Aye.
Okay. All right. Resolution 122, establish a policy.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion?
What number are we at?
122. So
resolution number 6.
Right.
No, number
five.
Number 5, resolution 122.
5, sorry.
So I know we postponed this also. I'm just curious, has anything changed in this?
Yeah, I did speak with Deputy Kelly. That we do have the capability through software that was purchased relatively recently to do completely paperless. So that is, there is a portal. I don't know if there were any updates on it, but it should be soon coming.
So Information Services is working with the vendor in order to activate the portal. We had issues with a previous software version, and that was it. So they've reached out to the vendor last week, and we're seeing how we can get that going. I still do want to just say, like, we need to leave a paper option for people. So this will capture a large part of the audience, and there will be a lot of efficiency from it, but we need to leave the paper option.
And it will be... fully meaning like no receipt also.
I mean, more than likely, most of the systems that I've seen, you get a PDF copy of
right.
it.
Okay, just because that was the big conversation, is if you're going to get the same receipt, what's
yeah.
the point?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Any other discussions? All those in favor?
Aye.
No. Opposed? Okay. 123, establish a policy to formalize. Okay. Got a second? Second.
Did I move it?
Yes,
I can't second.
Second.
Oh, sorry. I wonder
discussion.
If I can find it.
Yeah. 23. Discussion. All those in favor?
Just pause. I read this. This had a lot of elements to it of the caveats of when you can still hire, what kinds of positions. I did not notice anything, but I just want to point out before we rush through it that it has many, many elements. I assume, was it yours, Lex Sedimoni, or both of yours, that the attorneys have looked at that and all of the different caveats are ones that are clear, just because it's way more than I could know were legit. Oh, okay.
Executive
staff
have
to look at it?
This was recommended, I believe, by the...
And the concept is not, it's more that there's several different, there's a lot of caveats and ifs and thens, so I just wanted to know whether people had a chance to fully vet it. Did you all get a chance?
Not to that extent, no.
Would you like us to postpone a week?
Yeah, we
should.
It says it's attached here too as Exhibit A, but where's Exhibit A?
It's on here. I mean, it's in our. You have to get the backup. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's there. I mean, there's a lot. That's my point. I mean, it's. I didn't find any concerns. I'm just saying it had a lot of. There's a lot there.
Oh, okay. Make a motion to postpone for a week. Second on the postpone for a week?
I'll second.
Second. Discussion? Yeah. All those in favor of postponing a week?
Can Nick take a look? And then
yeah.
Have Chris take a look?
Sure.
And then by, next week we'll...
That would be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll follow up with the sponsors.
Anybody opposed to postpone? Okay, thank you. 127. Establishing policy to prioritize meals for residents. Second.
Second.
Oh, second.
Second. Discussion?
Yeah.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. President 129, establish a policy to maximize...
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion?
So I'd like to offer a friendly amendment to this. On page 3, which is the 1, 2, 3, 4th resolve, where it says resolve the chair of the legislature or designee. I would like to change it to chair of the legislature and designees. This is going to be a pretty substantial policy initiative of this body, and I just want to make sure that we're fully represented on the RFP.
That's fine with me.
Can I have a second for that amendment?
Sure, I'll second that.
All those in favor of the amendment? Okay. Opposed? All right. On the resolution as amended.
Do I
need
to vote on
that? Are we ready
to vote?
I think so. I think we moved it for discussion.
127
at the end of this, I'm going to make a motion to reconsider 127 for the deputy executive.
Can we finish?
Well,
I'll take care of this.
129?
Yeah,
I got taken care of
then. All right. All those in favor for, as amended for 129?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried.
Make a motion that we reconsider 127.
Second.
Sorry about that. This one, I was on vacation last week, so I missed the committee meeting. But I just wanted to flag that we have some implementation questions on this one. It's a pretty big policy. It would be a big responsibility to take on. So it feels like there needs to be some more conversation on what it looks like.
Commissioner Iapoci and Deputy Executive Kelly had conversations with both last week on this topic.
On this one?
Yeah, but not my portfolio. This, not to the extent that we
understand.
We don't have $1 million plus appropriation for this either.
Yeah, I just did some quick math today on like what this could cost, and just on the meals alone, it could be over $1 million, and that's not counting salaries for people, transportation costs. So, just
It's an RFP. Is
only
that
we have that dark money.
It's an RFP, but we usually don't like to put out RFPs without, intending to award.
The awardees typically expect something on the other end of it, and right now there's no appropriation or anything behind it, so it's really not even an RFP.
We have a precedent for sending RFPs that don't have a specific appropriation.
Statement of qualifications or RFQI, something like that, is very different than an actual.
Even last month with the mental health needs assessment.
But that one probably won't be millions of dollars in cost. So that's what we're flagging here. And the implementation is a lot harder because that's a study, right? You can find a consultant to do an evaluation. This one is, there's 16 motels all over the county, some outside of the county. There's delivery implications. We don't know if we don't know if there's anybody who'd be able to take it on, what it would cost.
Well, for the amount of outreach that I did to your office to discuss this prior, I am frustrated that this conversation wasn't able to happen in health. I know that you're on vacation, but for it to happen in this setting is frustrating, frankly. I don't know what to say about that. I would like to speak for a few minutes on the merits of this. We have hundreds of people in emergency housing throughout the county, and dozens of people are in hotels every single day where they do not have kitchens, where they do not have meals that are provided for them the way that they are in shelters. These folks are in those situations because that's what we have available as a county for them, and they're our responsibility. Right now, the private sector, through nonprofits, have stepped up to feed these folks. That cannot continue indefinitely. And if this hurts to pay for this, it should hurt because this is that important. We need to get these folks in stable housing.
All right, let's chair Bartone here.
Thanks. I agree that this is a critically important issue, and I applaud the sponsors for bringing it forward. The one thing that I would say is that just on a technical level, and maybe that's where the disconnect comes with what, the reference to the last month, is that this is actually establishing the policy and having the RFP. So it's one question that jumped in my mind was, okay, if we pass this, we're creating a policy, but then when the RFP comes back, if we don't like it, we're in violation of our own policy because we're approving the policy. So, and it's not normal that both those things happen in one resolution. I don't know, I'm fine with if the sponsors are okay with waiting a week or a month if necessary to work it out with the exec's office. It would probably be helpful internally. I don't like to have numbers in here that would signal what we think it's going to cost or what we're willing to pay. I think it's better to have it go out blind, but I think those conversations should happen. But I think we just need to be clear, if we're supporting the policy, then the RFP, it's almost perfunctory. It's like it's going to come back to us, and we're going to, in order to support the policy, we're going to have to do it.
And I'll just say, if I may, Chair, I'm open to scaling back the severity of the language around the policy. I think if I think we should preserve the option to not move forward with it, to determine after we get responses that it is too expensive to feed these people.
Okay, so I'm willing to have a conversation either way, because I mean you make a compelling argument, and I agree with you to the extent that it's got to be amazingly difficult to feed yourself in a hotel, especially when you're very far from. One, you have no kitchen, as you point out, so that makes food more expensive because it has to be prepared. But two, you could also be very far without a means of transportation, as we've all heard about the challenges on certain roadways in the county. But I think we do have to do our due diligence in terms of understanding the logistics and the implications. At the end of that day or days, we may be behind a policy regardless of what it's going to cost because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where we may end up. So I just think we want to be clear.
All right. Question there, Nolan, then Walter.
Yeah, I was uncomfortable and raised some concerns in Public Works around the fact that these circumstances are very different for the different sites, for the different people. And I ended up supporting it because I thought that we should gather this information. But I think breaking apart the gathering of that information from the policy might make sense, except that the policy that we care about this and that we're prioritizing, it does seem right to me. So I know from some of the experience that I have with Samadhi that there are people who in these kind of emergency housing settings go to diners, and they would undoubtedly prefer that than having a meal delivered to them. And so I was concerned, are we going to set up a mechanism for delivering meals that aren't even desired? I think we need to understand this better. Commissioner Iapochi says that the department does consider when they're providing housing that it has to have meals or it's not really housing. So there's a certain redundancy in saying that the county has this as a priority to what his understanding is of the department is already doing. That is, they would not consider it acceptable to have a placement where the individual or the family did not have access to food. I was hoping that we might think about this more in terms of a broader nutritional approach that would say that we wanted to prioritize nutritional stability and basically help families want to have something other than Pop-Tarts, if indeed Pop-Tarts was at the top of the list. So I just felt like we are moving in to fix something, and I don't feel fully grounded in what the issues are and parameters, what we're already doing, how it works and doesn't work. So I would prefer to have more of that discussion, although I wasn't prepared to vote against this. So maybe there's a way to postpone and formulate the RFP in a way that would make sure to get us the information that we want to make sure that we understand the problems and also understand the scope of the implementation of solutions that we might want to bring in vote.
I'm going to go to Leslie Wolfe next, but I just will say that after what Chair Bartel said, I didn't catch that part of it. I wouldn't have thought of it, but to me this is exactly like the salary study resolution, which we set a policy on, where we locked ourselves into doing something that turned out to potentially going to cost us a lot of money, so we sort of didn't do it. I'm prepared to make a motion to, if nobody else will, to postpone this. So for those who want to speak next, I'm going to go to you, but just and hope that I think we will be postponing, especially considering the there. But let's do Walter.
Thanks. I'm fine with postponing it. I'm fine with the idea of hammering out some details. It's obviously quite a huge undertaking. I'm not so sure about if I agree that all of these people in these hotels have access to food, having been in some of those rooms. I will say my fear is separating the policy from the practice, and I think this approach that we are now taking, and it'll be here, it'll be for the art study, is previously we had done it the other way, where the RFP was not attributed to a policy, and unfortunately, like for the reentry with the jail, it ended up that we did not get to have the program that we had hoped for because we didn't have the policy attached to the RFP. We kept them as separate things. So when the RFP didn't seem to work out, the program that got implemented was not the program that was in the design. And if we had had a policy associated with that, we could have assured that whatever steps are taken would meet the original intent of the reentry. And so, and I think because of that, and in conversations with Vicki, you know, there was this recognition that our intent has to be attached to the RFP of what we're hoping it will achieve. Might need some cleaning up, perhaps, but I caution against separating this out. If this means we have to do it, then we have to do it. This means a second RFP, but I think that's the only way our desires can be articulated and attached to these RFP processes.
Thank you. So I agree with the postponement as well, but I think we have a way possibly to figure this out, right? So we did Project Resilience where we delivered meals by the thousands, I'm hearing, right? You know, from the county. We purchased them from local restaurants and stuff like that, right? So we do have that as a foundation to work from. We know how many people are in shelters, how many children, how many adults are in our provided shelters and motel rooms each day. So if we could somehow or another look at how we were able to do Project Resilience so quite rapidly and effectively for quite a few weeks there, right? I mean, to me, we have the basis to do this, and you know, we have the cost associated with it, and even though that wasn't our money, you know, does that mean that we spent more money than we should have at that time? Or, you know, are there things here that we can use as lessons from Project Resilience where we did provide those meals to help us get this off the ground?
Legislator Ronk is in the room. Legislator Erner. Legislator Ronk.
I'm fine. You can go to
Okay. Legislator Erner.
Thank you. I appreciate the last 2 points by Legislators Cahill and Walter very much, and would refer the committee back to what Legislator Uchitel had said. It should hurt for us because our people are hurting. Our constituents of all y'alls that are coming to coming around to whoever's available and saying, I don't have access to food, I don't have transportation. We may have some policy that I'm not aware of in terms of doing this already, but it's not happening. People are spending whatever they have to take a cab to get whatever they can, find some scraps right now. And again, as we heard, Project Resilience gives us the model. As Legislator Uchitel had said, we have the private sector doing this right now, but these are people we're responsible for. We are housing them right now. We're trying to get them out of that housing. The more that we can provide them what they need to do that, which includes transportation to look for new housing, which includes meals, so they don't have to scrounge for that, that's what we need to do. It's really urgent, actually. And I appreciate the original vote on this. We went right ahead. I hope that you'll consider doing that again.
I have one question, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, and I do support the postponement. Now, in this emergency housing, if these folks are receiving food benefits through county assistance or whatever, would they somehow be docked because of that assistance? I mean, wouldn't this be like double dipping or?
No, and that's part of why I pushed back at the suggestion that we ought to give them gift cards they can spend at a diner, because I felt that that would have a monetary value that could remove their eligibility for benefits. We had that happen with the universal basic income pilot, but I did speak with Commissioner Iposi, who is a lawyer, and assured me that it would be fine. I also spoke with our attorney, Counselor Ragucci, also a lawyer, also assured me it would be fine.
Thank you. Debbie, thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I think the example of Project Resilience is a good one, and that's why we're trying to figure out the logistics, because that was something that was, you know, a groundswell, people helping, restaurants making food for free, people volunteering, delivering it. The program where we pay for all those things, home-delivered meals with our contractor Gateway, has been really hard to implement. They have a lot of trouble finding drivers at the rate. They've had everybody from administrative assistants to vice presidents actually delivering the meals because they just can't find drivers. And that's one program. So if we were to expand to a program like this, that's just a lot more need. So, you know, not trying to say that this shouldn't be a priority. I just think that if we're going to move forward with it, we should know what the potential scale is of what we're saying.
Legislator Murray?
Well, first of all, with the salary study, I think it was said that it was going to be more expensive than necessarily it was going to be, and then the audit committee just failed to put out an RFP for a long time. I think the comptroller eventually came along and had found something from another county that had been done for very cheap. Now we can move forward. So had the RFP been in there, we would have just done it. Probably would have been done quicker. But it always amazes me when the times we decide to do our due diligence in this county with regards to equity, which would have eventually been equity for pay for union members, that salary study would bring around. Might be expensive. Let's drag our feet here. Food for these people that are living that I've experienced firsthand, stealing, you know, people, the mentally disabled adults being caught stealing right next to my store at the dollar store because they have no food. But attempting to purchase a property for $4.5 million that was just purchased for $2 million, all those millions of dollars. Well, we can't hold that up. We got to rush right into that. All these different things I see us just kind of rush into, and the other things that I hear monetarily, we got to really pump the brakes here because this is a little more money than we want. Always amazes me. And as Phil said, something like this should hurt. Maybe we start to actually attack this problem with a cause and effect approach rather than just ignoring its existence.
As the bleeding heart liberal in me feels like whatever the cost is, we need to give food to these people. But I will also add that the expansion of SNAP was found to have an economic development impact because it improved grocery stores. And so whether it's giving money to restaurants to get the food or expanding Gateway or hiring more people to deliver, like, this is actually also an economic contribution. So when you think about the cost of it, that shouldn't go alone because it actually, whether it's creating jobs or expanding or supporting businesses, restaurants who've suffered and continue to suffer, maybe this is an assistance for them that will actually help boost their own thing. So when we think of the cost, we should also think of all of the benefits besides just the food, which is the most important one, of course.
So for us, I don't think the hesitation was based on the cost. I think one meal per person per day, 400 people, 365 days, you're talking about 144...
Just people that are in hotels.
Yeah. So we're talking about in excess of like 140,000 plus meals annually. And that's the number that made up bulk. It wasn't anything to do with the appropriation. If you calculate it, roughly $7 or $9 a meal, and you're placing 400 people a day that you're going to give one meal to, it's logistically a challenge. That's it. It's not like if it's $1 million, it's $1 million, but we're struggling on our existing contract with Gateway, and Gateway was the only bidder on that contract for the home-delivered meals to seniors at the time, and we're getting ready at some point to go back out. I don't know that Gateway will even apply. So it's logistics. It's not about the money. It's not about the need. There's nobody on this side that's not recognizing a need or a desire to do it. It's 144,000 potential meals that have to be hand-delivered on a daily basis, 7 days a week to these people. How do we do that? Is there a vendor that exists out there now? Because I don't think Gateway is going to be able to do it. They can't do the existing. That's all.
Trevor, tell.
I appreciate this conversation. I think it's good. And I was just following on Legislator Walter's comment just about the economic impact of the food. I just would want to ask the sponsors, and when it gets to the point of going out to an RFP, about considering expanding the scope of the resolve to have the RFP maybe, again, following on Deputy Executive Kelly's comments just now, to expand beyond the possibility of it being a single vendor that's making and delivering the meals, and maybe opening it up to all kinds of creative thinking, whether it's
food trucks.
Yeah, exactly. Like, let's think about how we can, even in anticipation of a potential pushback on a single vendor approach, how we might be able to make this work in a broader way.
Legislative team.
Thank you. You know, just to get some numbers out there, I believe there's 16 emergency shelters. There's about 360 people right now that are being housed. We do have Ulster County Community Action that goes out, I'm not sure how many times a week, though. I think logistically, volunteers are an issue, and we did run into that with Project Resilience as they kind of start fading out. And yeah, 360 people with 365 meals is 131,000 meals annually. So are we going with
That's one meal a day.
$7 and $9 is what we were calculating at. Which
yeah, and the restaurants are getting reimbursed $10 a meal.
After inflation, absolutely.
And that's the earner.
We should hire people.
So someone goes into emergency housing, you ask them, we're going to start bring you one meal a day. Here's some options. Pick one. You can change any time. That's like if we're wondering whether people would rather go eat at the diner or get a delivery from one of the several people we award this to. We can ask people who are actually going to eat it what they want.
So I accept a 1 week postponement if it's the will of the committee to postpone it by 1 week. The work that I will do in the intervening days will be to coordinate with the county executive team to better understand their concerns, to see how we can incorporate that into this language. And I also would be open, and to the point that Chair Bartels made, to how we can adjust this so that the will of this body, of our body, to Eve's point, to Legislator Walter's point, is preserved here so that we don't end up with what happened with the reentry, and but that we're not completely locked into moving forward with this. It's not my intent that, like, no matter what the bid comes back with, we have to go forward with it. It sounds like it's being heard that way. And I am open to changing language so that it is clear that that is not the case.
I'll make a motion to postpone 1 week.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. 131, authorizing the Chair of Legislative Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Okay. 151.
Move it.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 153, amendment 20.
Hold on. She's here.
She is. We
didn't
talk to her.
Congratulations.
Ryan,
for next week.
Yeah.
Go right ahead.
Do you have a problem with that one?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's introduce Elizabeth. We did interview her in law enforcement, public safety. And maybe you can take a moment and tell us some brief four sentences or less.
Keep trying to bust them out.
I'll tell you, I've been working in the public defender's office for 5 years now on the family court side, and for the past 3 years it's been a relatively unmanaged office. And it really needs, it's a department that really needs someone who's going to manage it and manage the money and manage the staff. And I have tremendous management background. I've been a practicing attorney for 17 years. Very well respected, very well liked in the community. My colleagues and the judges, very just across the board, had in my office as well. But I have very, very excellent management skills, human resource skills. I think I bring a lot to the table in this job that hasn't been there, particularly in the last several years where it's been.
Yes, thank you. All right, resolution 153, amended to 2023 capital budget.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second. And I have a second.
Second,
thank you. Discussion. Chair Bartels.
Sorry, I'm getting up to this. 701. There's a lot to say about this. There's some technical questions I have with this. This is going to come up again in other resolutions, just in terms of the fund balance unassigned language. But on the bigger picture with this, I'm really, I feel like we need a little more discussion about these line items. I began the discussion with Deputy Executive LaValle, and I know that Deputy Executive LaValle was on vacation for the last week. My understanding, I'm going to speak about this and the next resolution a little bit because they do intersect. This is what was submitted prior, which I know that Deputy Executive LaValle said that she spoke with the person that is under consideration in the next resolution 154, and that contract contemplates that person submit a proposed budget. Deputy Executive LaValle told me that she had similar concerns that I had to this budget. Things like landscaping, give me pause. If we're going to be selling this building, I think we need to be really, really tight on this budget, and so I want to understand that. I also, just if I can jump between both, I also, as we get to the next one, really want to understand the mechanism by which we're entering into over a $1 million contract with a vendor. To what? Is that vendor going to front us the $500,000 tax payment and then submit for reimbursement and then we're going to pay them or cut them a check for $500,000? Because that's the way this reads, it sounds like they're paying all the payments because we're approving $1 million in a contract to them, which is very confusing to me as well, given that the line item for that that portion of the contract, is very small, $240,000 or somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I have a lot to say, but I'm interested in what everybody else has to say. At the very least, I'd like this to hold a week. But, I know that we need to get money funded to operate this building. We're already several months into ownership. This is the first time we're seeing this, right? We took ownership in January. And I know that things cost money. I am very concerned that we get an appraisal. I would have liked to have known that it was already done, but in the absence of that, so there's a lot that I know needs to happen and needs to be in work. So I realize that there needs to be funding, but I'm not prepared to support these numbers as they're written before us, and I would need some more understanding on those line items. Again, that conversation began with Deputy Executive LaValle. I have confidence that we're going to continue that conversation. She and I were in a good place, and you were away on vacation, which now we're back.
Deputy Kelly.
Thank you. So I've also been working with Deputy Executive LaValle on this. The budget on which this is based on, I get it, it's imperfect, and I've had several conversations with Chair Bartels going back to last year, which her input actually led to us firing the existing property management company that nobody was really comfortable with because they had the ties to the old ownership group. So in order to form a budget, we needed to have a starting place. And the starting place, unfortunately, was the former property managers. And it's also going through the old bills for utilities and power and all of those things. We're not retaining all of the different things that they had in their budget, and the person we intend to hire for the property manager, Karen Beltry, went through and cut an additional $60,000 to $70,000 from the budget based on her walkthroughs. Her charge is about $4,800 a month to manage the property and the bills. To the chair's question on the property tax bill and these other parts, the intention, and this is a unique relationship for us, we manage our own buildings, but this is not something we intend on keeping, and it's not something we currently have the staff to maintain, so that's why we've gone outside for somebody to help us manage it. The property tax bill, I that's a logistics question. We're responsible for paying it, whether we pay it in the first instance or get invoiced from the property manager. I guess we can work that out. I'm either way, we're responsible for the bill because we have for-profit tenants within the facility. How we do that, whether it's an invoice or whether we're paying it, I don't know. Unique relationship will work through the technicalities, but that's kind of it there. I think anything that's not spent, you know, we're only going to pay what's invoiced to us. We're making, I wouldn't call them, and this was something Legislator Petit brought up several times in the Public Works Committee, is we don't want to be making investments. We're not making investments aside from making sure that mold's not growing in occupied spaces. There are several leaks in the roofs up there, so we need to make sure that they're dealt with in a way, not where we're going to replace an entire membrane. Kevin could probably help me out there. But that we don't allow it to leak into other departments or other people there.
Can bid, so.
I know. He
no
can't
charge,
bid.
Right?
No charge. So the numbers, I will say it's not based on our experience with the facility because we haven't had experience with the facility, so we do have to rely on other people's expertise here. But whatever is not spent, and this is something we agreed to in the Public Works Committee, is we will submit a monthly report so everybody can see everything that's invoiced, everything that's spent, so everybody can see what's going on in the facility. If it's unspent, it's going to sit in fund balance. That's it. We're not going to invest anything other than what needs to be done. And invest is only in making sure it's up to some standard, because we are the responsible landlord now. We have to make sure that we respect the tenants that are there. We just can't let it completely go. These are active businesses in the space. So I'm happy to answer questions, happy to pivot. We have bills. We do need to pay those. Thank you.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, what I find confusing is the combination, as you mentioned, the property manager in 154 is just 8 months, $4,800 a month. I understand why you need the property manager at this point. There are people in there. I guess I would feel more comfortable if the types of bills, like paying back the property tax and the other kinds of things, are extracted from what the property manager does, because that way we can consider which kinds of things are we doing in-house, which kinds of things are worth doing, not worth doing, and it just, I feel like when you're adding this whole other person in there who's making the decision for the county on each of those things, which is what it feels like, even though they have to tell you and get reimbursed or, you know, account for it, it's still that one person who's making a decision on what those things should be, and rather than it's starting with us. And so, I don't know, for me it feels like it would be more comfortable to extract. I hear that there are things that have to be paid for, but let us be in charge of that and let this person be the property manager for 8 months at under $50,000 and do the property manager job.
If I can say, if that is the value of the property manager, so I can tell you from walking through the building with the low quoter of the property manager, she was already seeing things and ways to save costs in the building, minimize the chance of leaks, turning off of electric baseboard heat in unused stairwells. She was already going through that, so the value added there is that we don't have the bandwidth for it, and she has the mindset and the ability to do that. And the modifications to the budget from when it was originally proposed was her going through the building and line by line looking at where she was proposing cuts.
Can I respond
to
that? So that's great, and she should. She's the property manager, and that's not, I don't see any reason why securing her as a property manager at that rate should change that. I think what I'm talking about is the decision to go forward with something and whether that's happening. I think she should absolutely identify the elements that should be done as
the
property manager.
Part of that is because we know that this is most likely a temporary hold of this property, that it requires us to amend contracts, which most likely are over $50,000, require legislative approval for each one of these buckets. If we don't use her as the way to review after our review, she would also review it and then pay the bill and then the
reimbursed or fronted for that approved payment. Because it's just, it's a cascade of contracts that then have to be touched. And everything has to be altered, everything has to go through contract management, and most likely the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
No, that was just the point. I mean, there's an efficiency with the property managers who typically, in a normal scenario with a property manager, they would actually have a property account from which they would pay all of the different bills and vendors from. So we're doing this slightly differently, where she's not getting an account, she has to remit the invoices to us and we'll review and pay them, but it's going to happen through her and the property, not to Deputy Executive LaValle's point, it's not going to be us setting up individual vendor accounts for all of these different things. So we'll have full view into all of the bills and everything that's happening, and they'll be in our we'll be able to record these, but it's so that we don't have to, on a temporary basis, set up all these different accounts. It's an efficiency thing.
Wait, before she pays it, or
before
after?
She won't be able to pay it unless we remit money to her. So she submits the invoice to us, just like any normal vendor would, and then we give her the money in order to pay the account, whether it's Central Hudson or a plumber or whatever else the other vendor would be.
So she gets to pick the vendor, or so there's no procurement process. And look, and this is a unique situation. So she could, her husband's plumbing company may be doing the plumbing, but
we hired the property manager. Yeah. That's part of it. So otherwise, we have to go out.
I understand that.
Yeah.
And that's when I saw it. Do we know what the total cost of rent is there? What is the?
It's in the top few lines.
$100,000.
So,
are we sure that she was the lowest qualified bidder? Somebody said 10%. If we did the math, which was the other bid? There was one bid that was definitely higher.
$536.
What's
the next
cent per month?
10%.
Right, didn't one bidder say 10% of income?
So 10% annualized on that $536. So it's over $50,000.
Oh, she's at 48.
She was 4,800, so she was below the 10%.
She's at 10%.
She's higher.
No, if you multiply it by 12,
she's at about 10.
So the 9 month was total revenue was $536,000.
So was the other bid actually cheaper?
Divide that by 12.
I know this is a real estate. A residential real estate person that handles, I don't know, do we know that she handles buildings like this?
368 Broadway is where that they were. She was the property manager for 368 before we purchased it.
Oh, I love it. It's just the same names. But,
it was through a competitive process where purchasing, or actually DPW solicited quotes for these, so we provided the other quotes to the other committee.
Tell me if it's the most qualified bid while I'm making my point. I knew you were working up. I was just going to keep talking to you. So it seems like we have a buildings and grounds under DPW. I just feel like and maybe they are involved. I'm just not hearing that they are. And half of this stuff, I mean, we really need, like Legislator Walter was saying, and I think what Amanda's trying to get to is, I don't know if it should be this much and just handing it over, and we didn't even know how. I mean, I assumed that she was going to tell us this is what needs to be paid, and then we send it off. But as far as overseeing the property for a couple of months, we can't have buildings and ground do the majority of this?
No.
Why not?
We don't have the resources for it. They don't have the manpower or the person power and are able to do this. They don't. So if you talk to Leo or any of the crew over there or the commissioner, they do not have the bandwidth to manage another.
Why haven't we heard this?
300
purchasing buildings left and right. We've taken, we have Elizabeth Street, we have Broadway, we have, and now I'm hearing
this building. We actually added people for those facilities.
I've heard recently we don't have, some of the guys that are supposed to be doing the trails are being pulled off to do other things.
So
what is happening here?
I can speak to the
resolution.
I can speak to the resolution and the 300,000 square feet that they do not have the ability to handle. They don't. I mean, the trails and everything else is not part of this discussion right now. It's about this building, and DPW has been working with us hand in hand through every step of this process, though. And they would have told us if they could have handled it.
I'm not saying that we have to have three or four people there all day long, like maintenance people at the building, but I'm saying some of these things that she, I mean,
You can't, I mean, landscape, what is the landscaping there? I mean, we're going to hire a landscape, we're going to let somebody hire a landscaping firm, I mean, in the original thing, and that was another thing. It's one thing to just start from a point of the numbers that we used, but just, it sounds like we just passed those numbers, never went through them. I mean,
no, we went through them over and over again, and there is a certain amount of standard.
Like it was almost just passed over.
But it's not true.
Originally was.
Yes.
Yeah, because they've owned the building for X amount of years and managed the property, and that is the experience factor that we have. So if you looked at any of our other facilities and went to Buildings and Grounds,
but now
and
we're
said,
changing that.
Wait.
I wasn't changed before.
Chair?
Please, first of all, I was talking and he started talking before.
Yeah, you asked him a question and let him answer it.
If you ask any of our Buildings and Grounds crew who are in charge of different facilities what it takes to manage that facility in terms of cost, hours, landscaping, whatever it is, that's how we build our budget by building that you see in each division in Buildings and Grounds each year. So in order to get that experience factor and build a budget for a property we just took title to in January, we need to rely on something else out there. And that experience comes from the former management company. We walked it with the one that we're trying to select, and we pared that down by $70,000. We're also not carrying the person that they wanted us to for an additional $85,000. So it is not the same budget. There are certain lines that are the same. That is a correct statement, because what else would we base it off of? There is none of that experience. We don't own the building. How can we develop that experience? We have to rely on something.
But now
you're not going to spend money. That's not needed. What was the question? I didn't hear you, Joe. That's it. What was the question?
No, my frustration is more with the chair than you right now.
I get it's not perfect. If we want to like really beat this thing up over $3,900 for landscaping, if there's tree issues or something else, we can do that. But if there's a tree issue, we're coming back to ask for it, and if that's what the legislature wants us to do, we can do that. But we've done our best at formulating our best estimate on what is required to carry this through the end of the year. It is not perfect. I cannot defend every single number in here to the nth degree. It's just not possible. But we're trying our best to carry a facility that's 300,000 square feet, that hasn't been taken care of, that has active roof leaks, and has active tenants currently in there. I don't think there's a lot of fluff in here, guys. Like, I really don't. We're not going to pay for anything we don't need. We'll give you a monthly report. We'll give you all the invoices. I don't know what else you guys really want us to do with it. I don't know. But we'll cut $3,900 if that's what's necessary.
All right, let's get around.
Thanks. I'm going to be very brief. I feel like I foresaw this discussion when we were having the original discussion on foreclosing on the property. I believe that this is why Mike Hine never foreclosed on the property, and I believe this is why you're seeing that we shouldn't have foreclosed on the property, because now the legislature is going to try and nickel and dime and question every expenditure that's going to happen there, that has to happen there, because it's got all these tenants, because it's large, and because it's been largely maintenance and whatnot has been largely ignored there. And now we've foreclosed on it, now we have this property that in order to get rid of, we're going to have to put some money into to make sure that it can be usable and sellable to another party. I just, it's one of those chicken and the egg things. There was a reason why this wasn't foreclosed on before. And then this discussion is going to continue to happen. It's going to continue to happen over and over again. We'll keep coming back to, well, we don't need to do that, but we foreclosed on the property, now we have to. It's the reason that we don't foreclose on, environmentally sensitive properties too, like junkyards and gas stations, because once we have it, then we have to fix it.
That's in the back.
Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, Legislator Rock covered most of the points. What was determinative for me in the Public Works Committee in this discussion is it's a 300,000 square foot building, and it has tenants in it. So we now are responsible to those folks. And if we let the building decline, then we won't be able to sell it. So we have to make these investments. Yes, it should be done carefully, but I think there is some real savings, and by putting it into a package like this, and it simply is not all DPW work. DPW doesn't have people trained to be landlords, as far as I'm aware, and neither does the rest of the county legislature or executive branch, as far as I'm aware. But if we never took this on, we never fixed it. So I think you can make an argument for foreclosing on it. I think you can make an argument for not foreclosing on it. We finally got to this point. Let's try to do something very pragmatic now that we did it, so that we minimize the cost to our other functions as a body and to our expenses. And I believe getting a very experienced person who knows how to do large buildings and knows how to do tenants is going to save us money in the long run if we don't micromanage it.
Thank you. Wow, there's a lot to deal with. So I'm going to start to respond to legislators Runk and Nolan's suggestion that it's reasonable to suggest that we should have not foreclosed, and that former executive's decision not to foreclose was a good one. We have spent the majority of this money in terms of making the town and the schools whole has been in penalties, compounding penalties, which ended when we foreclosed. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I estimate that's the taxes. No. The penalties were at least that much annually. So it's crazy. It was crazy to let it get this far. $6 million in penalties, I want to say, is the round number out of 10. Mm-hmm. So that's nuts. The second thing is, you know, I'm okay with hiring a building manager. You know, I am a little concerned that we don't have the capacity in buildings and grounds, because we're essentially talking about moving small amounts of money for 5 tenants, which incidentally, I believe that this document is missing a tenant, WellCare. When I walked to the building, WellCare was there. I don't see them represented in terms of the revenue, so that needs to be adjusted if they didn't disappear since I was last saw them. We have a limited number of tenants. One of the tenants isn't physically in the building ever, or nearly ever. So, you know, it's a limited capacity, but I realize we're stretched. I do want to understand what some of these numbers are. What $100,000? We bumped it up to $100,000 in maintenance. And incidentally, and I know we're talking about both resolutions, but the resolution to hire the management firm states this: that on or before the start date of this agreement, which is written as April 1st, the firm shall prepare and submit to the county for the county's approval a proposed operating budget and a proposed capital expenditure budget, which I don't see here, for the ensuing fiscal year. So I don't know if you've already worked with Viteri and the agency, and they've provided that, but that's in the contract. And what I want to understand is what the $100,000 is. If it is the county's intention, and if we're agreeing, I know it is the executive's intention to sell this property, then I think we need to spend as little as possible prior to selling it. This is not a building where our investment is going to be returned manyfold, where we're going to fix major roof leaks. We'd have to spend millions of dollars, and what's the return? You know, I think we need to get this up for sale. I do, if that's what we're going to do. I think we have to have the hearing about transferring, and I think it needs to be marketed for the highest price that we can get. And I do think it's saleable. It may not be saleable for what we would like to receive, but we're going to sell this building, and holding on to it for an extended period of time is absolutely not advisable. Yeah. So we're going to get there, but I want to understand these numbers. And incidentally, I want to repeat, because I'm going to say it again, that the decrease in fund balance unassigned is not accurate terminology. That's not, we need to be talk about appropriated fund balance. So we need to also make sure that changes in terms of in the resolution as a technical change prior to next week, which I'm happy to have our fiscal advisors work with budget to talk about that as well.
I just want to underscore the critical nature of having the tools in order to take care of this building. You know, this week we're looking at weather forecasts that are up into the 80s and 90s.
the air conditioning system, the chiller, is right now not operational. You know, our B&G folks went over there. This thing is not in great shape. They weren't comfortable starting to turn valves on their own to see what happened. They would like to get the vendor who's familiar with the facility and the equipment in there to do that work. And it has to happen this week. So that's where we're in problems right now like that. Safeco, Verizon, all these things are right on our lap that we're having to find workarounds because there are tenants in there and we have to have that space air conditioned, otherwise it's not going to be usable. And then again, just until I walked the building, I don't think I had a good sense of what 300,000 square feet was, but it is about five times the size of this building. It's acres of office space, although it's not all, certainly not all rented out. It is a very large building that has been minimally maintained.
Yeah, I just had a question about leases. So when we took this over, did we craft all new leases with these tenants? What lease are they under? What's the duration of the lease? Can we just break it in any time if we up and sell the building? Are we locked in for X number of years with these leases?
It varies. So in terms of lease length, like we didn't sever them. They're active businesses, and we're hoping to retain the employees in Ulster County. So we have been working with some of them to find them alternative locations in the area. BOCES, for instance, has their disaster recovery servers there. Their lease is up in June, and when I spoke to Dr. Schenker and his team, I said, you know, we're not going to extend. So anyone that's coming to us for extensions, we're not doing that, and then we'll work with them to try to find them alternative sites. But they're varying. We can send you guys a spreadsheet that has these on there, and then you'll understand, you know, the rents, the space occupied, and the duration. But again, like, whether it's for the next 3 years, we hope to not be in this building's business for the next 3 years.
Thank you. Yeah.
So we had a resolution in the Economic Development Committee 155, which was to sell the building or, you know, give the ownership to an unnamed, I forget what it was, how it was worded, but it was sell not.
Transfer, public hearing.
Yeah, just setting a public hearing to transfer owned by the county, but it didn't say to who. Right at any point.
Yep.
So trying to fold this all together, those three resolutions all together, mm-hmm. Right? What was the idea initially to do that 155 and then the costing? Yep. Obviously, if we transfer ownership to somebody else, the county wouldn't then be responsible unless we also transferred the responsibility of maintaining those buildings with the sale of the building.
So the entity that it would be UCEDA.
Right.
What the county has done in the past in terms of pushing it to the local development corporation, then do market and sale of the facility. So mm-hmm. It was to follow past county practice. Mm-hmm. I've had conversations with Legislator Maloney and others, including the county executive today, and we're researching whether that is absolutely necessary. It is past practice. There are legal opinions regarding the benefit of doing it that way, mm-hmm. But we're revisiting the research. I'm going to reach out to the Office of State Comptroller and also seek some guidance as to whether that's necessary. Mm-hmm. But that was it. There's an opinion out there that if we sell a building significant, I'm going to say this, and again, we're going to research more, but selling a building at significantly less, which is what I do expect to happen, than the $10 million that's owed, that it could be considered a violation of the gifting clause. So that's why, that's where we could be, I don't know, it's favoritism, it's gifting. I know this has come up in the past, so that's why the past practice was to move it to the LDC. Mm-hmm. We're going to revisit that discussion and that research. If it's easy enough, we'll just do it from the county and do an RFP for a realtor to then have that realtor market and sell mm-hmm. it. And the RFP would be so we can get a competitive pool of realtors, whether it's at UCEDA or whether it's right. here, that's what we intend on doing to make sure that hopefully we're also introducing competition into the commercial realty discussion.
So you guys envision which being the smoothest path? USITA, you know, handing it off to USITA,
honestly, it's the same people doing work. So for us, it would save us 30 days on a public hearing, and mm-hmm. we could do it. Mm-hmm. We could just move forward on it and then present
it. Yeah.
If it's legal, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If I understand, part of the question was regarding the maintenance.
Yes.
Okay, so the intent there was that the county would hold all of this, as we just have outlined in kind of with the property manager and the accounts, all of that would stay with the county. The ownership would go to, you know, under that scenario, would go to USITA after it was approved with a lease back to the county, and the county being responsible for the maintenance mm-hmm. and the upkeep. So none of those bills would be passed on to USITA.
Mm-hmm.
And
so I'm trying to see the value of transferring it to USITA versus if you can sell through the county. But if you can't sell it directly from the county, then you have to go through USITA.
Correct.
And so I guess then, of course, just like any other thing, you know, once you sell it, you're no longer responsible for the bills. And part of the PSA could also be, you know, kind of like what we did with Enterprise West, right? You know, where we said, you know, it's part of your responsibility. You know, no matter when we have a closing date, you know, that you maintain the building, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, one of the challenges with this particular property, in addition to what's in the rest of the town of Ulster in that area, you have close to 2 million plus in vacant office space square footage. So we just had another 100,000 open up via United Healthcare, and they're not laying off, they're just remoting their staff. They've mm-hmm. learned that they can do it with less mm-hmm. overhead. So there's a lot of empty space. This mm-hmm. is, you know, it's 300,000. It's not suitable for warehousing because the back end where the loading docks are way too shallow.
Right.
And that's the same on 901, which is next door. They're trying to turn it into a warehouse.
No, they're ripping that place apart.
There's no way you're going to get the size tractor trailers you need back there to make it that kind of active place. So it's an office building.
It is.
And it's some of it was never finished. It was built in 1983, vacated in 1993. They never finished.
It was
some
for
of the
expansion.
Stadium.
Yes. Right.
Correct. It was IBM. You were there.
I worked in that building, yeah.
So there's challenges. I don't know what the estimates are. We spoke with one of the appraisal companies. We got 4 quotes. They'll be able to turn it around relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. Karen Beltry, we plan on grieving it and speaking to the assessor to get the assessment down. That'll help. Things are in motion. It's not clean, though.
Right. This is my last question. Yeah. Have there been inquiries to the county for a person or parties to purchase that building already? There has been one.
One unsolicited inquiry for, I think...
$400,000.
I'll give you 410.
I don't know the name of the company, but it was
a tiling company. A tile and counter company.
Yeah, 400,000.
Legislative team.
Not bad.
It's $18 million.
You're a legislative team.
Yeah, $1.5 million.
You did. It was an hour ago, but we had your hand up. Okay, Comptroller Gallagher, you're next.
I just want to bring to light the numbers. The real property tax owed as of 2022 was $6.77 million, and then penalties and interest were $3.33 million. I also want to note that for the next resolution, there actually is a competitive bidding clause in the contract. So it says that unless otherwise consented to or directed by the county, all jobs shall be awarded on the basis of competitive bidding. It'll be overseen by the property manager. So it's not a true process like we have inside the county, but it is something. And then I lastly want to say, our office, this structure, we will not have claims audit ability on billing going, you know, invoices related to the management and fixing of this building. So we would like to be on a list of distribution of invoices that goes to the legislature, and we understand why in this case, but I did want the legislature to know we will not be looking at every bill that gets made on this property.
Absolutely consent to that.
All right, Legislator Maloney.
Yeah, first, Chris met me down at the building today and walked it for an hour, and we had, you know, he answered every question, and we had open
discussion and debate, and I appreciate it. I talked to Jen about it, and that is a different feel in this county than I've ever experienced. So I appreciate it, and we're back to arguing the rest of the meeting today.
Yeah, back to friendly.
look, a couple of good things I think may come out of this postponement, even if we end up. I wanted to explore some things. I do think we're spread thin as far as a lot of properties we have, so it would probably be a major undertaking to try to do the kinds of retrofitting to get a bunch of DPW here and things like that. Social Security maybe not as realistic as we hope, but grieving the assessment didn't seem to be happening, and we need to do that if we're going to sell and get the top dollar. So the legislature moving to postpone and make sure that the executive was that we could do that, and we are doing that, is a good thing. And you know, Chris was pretty fair today talking to me about the sale, and I think he told me it was the state constitution, the gifting law. I have Chris Rabucci looking into it. You're going to contact OSC. And if we are able to do it, I would much rather see us hold it, do it ourselves with a competitive, open, transparent process where we have full oversight. And if it's possible to do it that way, I'd feel much more comfortable. But this little pause we took, we're having a good discussion about the way we sell it, and we're grieving the assessment, which will definitely, I mean, when you look at the assessment the way it is, if we put it even with an assurance that I'm sure it'll be lowered, the amount that we're going to get and the amount of people that are going to be interested would be severely affected. I do just have to say that the idea that we wouldn't foreclose on a property that does not have environmental issues is basically illegal. And the fact that it was tried to be put into a brownfield study with not a single document out there over the last 20 years that has any proof of any environmental study should be looked at. And the fact that it was added by Mr. Bert Goldnick to a list that didn't exist. Bert went out and gave out lists, Ken, of properties that weren't foreclosed on and did not include that in the list. So if it was out of the goodness of Mike Hine and Bert Goldnick's heart that we didn't go after this.
I don't think it was out of the goodness of their heart. I never said that.
It sure as hell looks shady to me. We still don't know why it happened. The county attorney blames the commissioner of finance. The commissioner of finance blames the county attorney. No investigation. But that is, to me, as a legislator, is almost offensive to say, and look at, and this discussion that we're having right now is exactly what we're supposed to do. Well, we're going to have a couple of these discussions and then sell the building and get it back onto the tax rolls. The idea that this, an hour of this, is the reason that we didn't foreclose on this for 10 years is patently absurd and offensive.
I want to speak now.
Please do.
I lost my spot in line because I decided I was going to keep my mouth shut, and then you had to lob 13 accusations at me, so I'm going to just respond to them.
Put your back on.
May I?
Yeah.
I'm back on the... All right, awesome. So I don't think that an hour of this is why we didn't foreclose, and I think that your assertion that we're going to put it on the market, it's immediately going to sell, and we're going to get it back in the tax rolls is about the most wishful thinking that I've heard since I've been in the legislature. I've seen us put out surplus the piece of property and have it be, you know, unsellable for years. We've done that with South Manor, we've done that with Flatbush, we've done that with a bunch of properties. And we've done that while transferring it to an entity that makes it easier to sell. So I think that, I think that this is going to be a lot less, the one I wrote down here is what the Chair Bartel said, we should sell it as soon as possible. Couldn't agree more. I just don't think that that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen at a price that is going to be acceptable to this legislature. I don't think it's going to happen, at a price that is going to be acceptable to the taxpayers. But, those points aside, I'm not sure it's going to happen. I'm not sure we're going to be able to sell it. One thing I remember from the discussion, not to go down a rabbit hole, which I'm about to open up. I remember during the discussion on the Government Operations Center, we were talking about the price of property and whatnot. I remember Chair Bartels, saying emphatically multiple times in this committee that, commercial property is not at a value of residential property, and that it's not a good comparison to make. I think that you've got, as Deputy Executive Kelly said, millions of square feet of office space right now that's unused. So, people that are going around to buy office buildings are not buying office buildings right now because there is not a dearth of space. There is, in fact, an overabundance of space. So again, I don't see anything that you said, Legislator Maloney, happening. I don't see this selling at a good price. I don't necessarily see it selling at any price, and I don't see it selling quick. And you know, so again, it's not 1 hour of this that's a problem. It's how long is the county going to have to continue to make improvements to this building, to make renovations to this building, to have property management in this building, to continue to operate this building at a loss until we can sell it. I don't see it happening.
I say, Walter.
Thanks. Well, I mean, clearly it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't, because I don't see how not have foreclosing on it was a better solution than foreclosing on it. So, you know, it's not like that alternative is better. I think you're right, Legislator Ronk. I envision months and years going, and I envision the cost going up more and more. I am
can
really
say that again. I just want that for my memoir.
I can say for a fact. I mean, what you're going to have, unfortunately, not me, is that invoice, and it's, oh, it turns out it's way more money than we thought it was going to be, and everything's going to be way more money than you thought it was going to be. These costs that are there are going to, I'm pointing to her computer, are going to be way more than you think they're going to be. And I do think that it's somehow, and you know, we're kind of faced with this with Tech City. We kind of said, all right, what's the minimum that has to happen? And then what's the next step? And like, but take each one very slowly and very carefully, but start with what's the very minimum that has to happen right now, then let's take a pause, let's see where we're going next before we keep moving on. Or without a question, this is not going to be $1 million, this is going to be several million dollars. And I just go back to this idea of, and I think the chair had brought it up, of like, for right now, in this window, thinking about what's the minimal amount of things that have to be done, knowing that these people were in there. You know, I don't want anyone in bad circumstance, but, you know, they were there. They were already in the bad circumstance. They didn't start the day that we foreclosed on the property. It's the leaks. You know, I think that we should really, again, go back to what's the least that has to be done. I rather have us sort of have that conversation before approving it. And just the last thing I want to say is you mentioned that some of these tenants are leaving and you're not going to renew the lease. I'm just checking, when you did provided the income, did that get adjusted for each of the people who are leaving?
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to check on that. But so it does seem like pretty quickly there'll be potentially nobody in there and just continuous costs. And I think this needs to be done in a stepwise way, and I'm stressing the word wise and step.
So, thank you. To the point of minimum, this is what we believe the minimum is to carry it for the next 8-9 months. So, this is what we believe the minimum is.
Are you capping this? Are you going to say we will not go over this amount?
No. I wouldn't do that on any of our own facilities. I won't do it on one that we've only owned since January.
So, it's going to be triple at least.
I don't know that. So the other part is, if the tenants start to leave and if we find other places for them to go, then we will mothball the facility. So there's going to be a cost to mothballing it. You can't let it fall below a certain temperature. That would be the next progressive move if we're holding on to this for too long. And it will lessen the bills, but then we're eliminating the income. But if there's no active tenants in there, then there's no tax bill. So the carrying cost on a vacant facility does start to become less, and we are making a concerted effort to make sure that we find Ulster County locations for the active tenants in there. And that's ongoing now. And getting it to the mothball state will save the money, makes it less attractive for sale.
Can we sell it for a dollar for someone to turn it to housing?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, so you have to, so the issue, I'm not going to, come on tonight. We can have that discussion about best use for it, but I think if you guys want to visit the facility, I'm happy to offer my time to other people.
No,
housing could be a struggle. It's connected to a warehouse. So.
Yeah, I just, back to Legislator Maloney's comment in terms of if we can sell it ourselves, I also
would have the expectation that if we do transfer it to an LDC, that it would be a transparent and openly marketed process. That would be the only condition where I would transfer it. I don't see us going through a curated process. Again, my intention, if we're going to sell it, is to sell it as quickly as possible. And while I appreciate Legislator Ronk saying he doesn't think it's going to happen, I think it's all a question about the dollar amount that we're willing to accept. And, you know, as far as the taxes, my understanding is even if it were empty right now, we'd have to pay taxes for a certain period, right? There's a lag period with county ownership. So, you know, I think we really, really need to be very strictly thinking about any expenditures in that building and get it on the market post-appraisal as quickly as possible if that's the route we're headed. And with the understanding that we are not going to get all our money back. Really not likely, because we have allowed it to sit without the taxes being collected and paying these penalties for way too many years. So there is a point where you have to cut your losses and you have to get it back on the tax rolls. So while I can anticipate right now that I'm not going to be happy about the sale price, whatever it is, I am very, very motivated to get it sold.
Let's hit him on.
You know, it probably would have been easier to get rid of this building. 99% of the time when you go to foreclose and really start foreclosure process, you know what happens? The owner comes and pays their taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So we let it go. That whole idea that this was better to be let go, first of all, it's illegal. Second of all, we don't have a choice. Whether it costs us money or not, we can't let people operate businesses in fully functioning buildings that have no environmental problems and not foreclose. So I'm sorry if it costs us money. But by the way, this is costing us money because a legislator at the time was also the assessor over in the town of Ulster and had a full market evaluation of $16 million. What's that?
I said, may he rest in peace.
Yes, may he rest in peace. But there's answers.
I'm just saying he's not here to defend himself.
It's a fact that the full market value was $16 million. The lawyer at the time for the county legislature was also the lawyer of the town of Ulster. There's more going on here when we're making people whole at a $16 million full market evaluation. So I'm sorry, but we should have foreclosed way back when. We don't have the choice not to. It doesn't matter if we end up keeping this building and tearing it down. I actually think at some point we'll get a taker to go do something, even if we have to almost give it away. But there are no choices here. The idea that there was actually a choice or there was anything innocent going on is absurd when you look at all the facts and completely unacceptable. And we're in the position we're in because of the assessment and because we waited this long. There is no there's absolutely no excuse for either one of those things. For this building to be assessed that high right now is absurd and should be looked into.
Mr. Erner?
Never mind, thank you.
Short of taking that offer for $400,000, which may sound like a good deal right now, I don't think these numbers are going to change any by next week, so I'm prepared to vote on this today.
I want to postpone it a second.
I wasn't talking about the goodness or badness of the decision. My point is that the same legislators who were pushing for the foreclosure are questioning all the costs associated with the foreclosure, and that's a problem for me. We have these costs because we foreclosed. We foreclosed. It's done. That's over. So we don't need to look backwards. We don't need to lob accusations. We don't need to say that it was because this person was the assessor or because this person was doing this. All that's done. That's over now. And you can feel free to talk to the Attorney General's office or whomever's going to investigate it. But that's not for this committee. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about what happened 5-10 years ago. Right now, we have a building. We have to fix it. We have to make sure that these people aren't going to be hotboxed in a week and a half. You know, we have to make sure that the mold isn't going to grow and cause environmental hazards for them. We have to make sure that the roof's not going to leak. We have to do these things in order to make sure that we have a building that we can sell quickly and for less money than we we owe on it or whatnot. I mean, I think that so much energy and effort goes into talking about, well, this is how we got here, and we need an investigation about how we got here. I'm not saying that that's not a valid conversation. I'm just saying this conversation is about the money that we have to pay to be able to upkeep the building that we foreclosed on. I wouldn't have if it were me. I wouldn't have pushed for it. I didn't push for it. But here we are, and we're talking about, well, how much money is the least amount? The county executive's office has said, this is what we've determined is the least amount to be able to keep the building safe for the occupants that are there. And then we're like, well, can you cut a little bit off of it? Because, you know, I don't think that we really need to pay this or that. And how did we come to this number? And it goes around and around and around and around for an hour. And now we're going to postpone it for a week. I don't think the numbers are going to change in a week, as Kevin Roberts said. I'm going to vote no on the postponement. I think we should vote tonight.
I am going to make a motion to postpone for 1 week. As I stated, our financial analyst has technical problems with the language in here that needs to be sorted out with Department of Budget. That's one reason. I do think we need to talk about the numbers, but wherever it's at next week, I know we need to move. And lastly, the idea of not foreclosing on it, we would have spent this much money this year in paying Ulster and the City of Kingston schools. Mm-hmm. So that's just bonkers crazy to me, but I have no
bonkers
problem.
Crazy.
Bonkers
like
crazy.
Bonkers crazy.
Yes, it's like double, it might be triple crazy, because
mega
honestly, we're spending close to $1 million a year on penalties that are accruing and accruing and accruing, and next year it would have been even more, because those penalties grow every year. So we had to cut the cord at some point. That was the right thing to do, 100%.
We're still talking about the past.
We need to make these kind of decisions. So I would like to postpone for 1 week. We'll get this sorted between our financial analyst and budget, and I'll have a chance to talk with Deputy Executive LaValle about the budget that supposedly in the next resolution they're supposed to be committed putting.
So we're postponing both?
1 week, yes. 153 and 154.
I'll second that.
Second discussion.
No, it's fine. Just
all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
It would have been very much taking that vote an hour ago.
Don't be less to talk about next week.
How much you want to bet?
It was 153
and
154. For 1 week,
yes. You should put a sticker on.
All right, resolution 156.
We have no discussion.
A motion?
Wait, we have to do 154.
We
never
blocked. We postponed both.
We didn't block, but
we didn't block, but
we did it the same way we did the other one.
You did.
Okay.
156.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Motion carries. 157. Here, motion.
Second.
Discussion.
I'll just say really quickly, I think this is great. This is state money to allow people to add accessory dwellings, which is major, major important thing for improving our housing situation, and this is all state funded, and so it's wonderful.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So carried. 158. Your motion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Okay. I'll just say the same thing.
Okay. And
second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So carried. 159. Your motion.
Move it. I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second it.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Yes, me too.
So carried. 163.
With the amendment, you
all received the amendment.
I'll move it.
Second.
Which one is it?
163. We have an amendment on that.
With the amendment.
What's the amendment issue?
That
appropriated spelled wrong. But that's okay.
Any discussion?
Instead of.
I know that we've been having issues with pathology and autopsies taking a long time. Is this going to solve some of that problem? Maybe. I know we've had problems long term, but.
I wish I could say that it solved the problem, but.
there's a shortage of pathologists in the country as a whole, and so I think we're going to have to figure out a long-term solution that might involve sharing with another county potentially, or having our own if that's possible. This is extending the current arrangement we have with Westchester Medical, and they're still looking for a full-time person. The person who we were using recently retired, and then our backup forensic pathologist took on a full-time job in Rensselaer County. So, I mean, this is the best solution that we have right now, but we're kind of in the position where all the counties in the area are kind of sharing / fighting over forensic pathologists. So, I don't know that the contract says that they need to have the autopsy done within a certain number of days, but that's not really within their control if they can't find a forensic pathologist who can be available. But they're doing the best they can. They're doing a nationwide search. They have a roster of per diem forensic pathologists that they're using all the way in Long Island, New York City, all the surrounding counties. So we feel pretty happy with the way that they've been responsive and their efforts, but this is not like something we can fix immediately.
Especially to Walter.
Yeah, I'm now obviously support this because we need to, but we had previous conversations about the idea of the medical examiner upping who they are, making them capable of being a forensic pathologist as well, and so the person's paid as needed and is a fully takes on both of those roles. Mm-hmm. Have you had any progress in that? Like, is there a plan to do that?
We have been talking about it, and I think it's something that we should talk about in the context of a budget. There are pros associated with contracting with Westchester, which is that they do take on the responsibility, not just for the forensic pathologist the full time, but for a backup. So if that person is not around, they find somebody to do the autopsy. So that's one of the pros. They also have a facility where we put them work. So if we were to have our own, we would still have to use the morgue. I mean, it's something that we're open to discussing, and it may be the best solution if we can find somebody. That's always the big. That's the big question mark, is if we can find somebody. Everybody's looking.
I feel like we'd be more likely to find someone if they had that full responsibility and salary that went with being the chief medical examiner as well. Obviously, we'll always have to use the morgue of the hospital, mm-hmm. but I just, especially given that they're having trouble for these to hire, that I think upping the level of what this person is doing for our county may make it easier to hire.
We're open to it. I mean, forensic pathologists make $300,000 a year plus fringe, wow. So that would be by far, you know, it's a matter of, mm-hmm. it's a question for us all to discuss if that's something that we want to add as an in-house
right.
person. But we're definitely open
to it. We also have a medical examiner who can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that there's the benefit to the Westchester Medical Center is the backup pathologist, but right now we're not really getting that. We are, but not in a timely manner. I don't think that they're making the time period required in the contract.
They're not, but they, yes.
I understand there's a reason for that, but those are the benefits to contracting out rather than hiring in-house, and we're not receiving those benefits, technically.
Well, we did have a forensic pathologist. The backup one has been taking our autopsies for like 2 months.
I understand, but I'm saying that my
the
point
timeliness,
is
yes,
right,
I understand what you're saying.
And the idea of having a backup is the timeliness. That's the benefit, mm-hmm. and we're not getting the timeliness benefit from them right now. And I'm not sure that there's an end in sight to that. So, and again, I think this is a concern because this involves grieving families.
Yes.
Anybody who's having a autopsy done predominantly is going to have had some sort of untimely death. So I think that we should have that conversation from a policy standpoint about whether we want to bring this in-house or not, whether we want to try and partner with Dutchess County, who has their own pathologist and has their own facility, state-of-the-art facility. So...
Yeah, thank you.
One last point, we did approach Dutchess County, and the quote that they gave us was significantly higher, like $700,000, almost double this, and then you have transportation costs, not saying that that's not a better option, just sharing that information. Yep. We still should consider it, and we plan on revisiting that conversation with them.
Yeah, I mean, I know that the comptroller's office several years back did an analysis of the outsourcing of this and the cost differential, which actually, at the point that we transitioned to Westchester, it was more costly. The argument was that we were getting it was more timely, more costly, more timely. But we're in a different place now with the national situation, and I agree with Legislator Ronk that we should have this conversation, and sooner than later, like well before the budget cycle, I feel like we should really start having it. And I concur that it's exceptionally painful to have grieving families, and I also have heard that it can be a real concern when it's related to crime or potential crime, like when you're talking about really long delayed, you're extending people's time that they have to wait till they are able to.
You run discovery problems too.
Yeah, discovery problems. It's problematic on every level. So I hope that we can really get engaged in this conversation and maybe start doing whatever outreach we have to do to get real numbers attached to the options. Thank you.
All right. Any other discussion?
On the amendment.
Yeah. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
It's going to be a no.
On the amendment?
Yeah.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Right.
Why?
I got my reasons. That can be a no. Right. You ask everybody who's a no why they're a no.
I'm wondering. Our financial person found that this change needed to happen, and you're voting no to it. Okay.
On the resolution as amended.
Is it going to fail?
No.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I'll go back and count how many times you've been a statement no on something.
Usually that comes with a statement.
usually the statement is I'm a statement no.
Resolution 164, can I get a motion? Second? Second?
I'll second it.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Yes.
Opposed? Okay. Resolution 165, can I get a motion?
I move it.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
I'm down with you.
Resolution 166.
Move it.
Second? Second?
I'll second.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 167?
I'll move it.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 168?
Move it.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 169?
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 170.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 171.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Discussion.
I just was curious. This was an RFP. How many responses did we get from RFP?
We had two. One was a partnership between three organizations, and then one was
So,
and then we chose the one that was a collaborative.
Oh,
okay.
Thank you.
All those in favor? Opposed? Carried. 172. Motion.
Move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Carried. 173.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 174.
I'll move it.
Second. Second.
Move it and second.
Second. Walter. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Mm-hmm. Carry. 175.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Carry. 176. Motion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. Here we go.
I just asked for someone to explain why the increase in the cost on this one.
I think he's still here somewhere.
So this
was fellow Dennis.
contract management services over the period of the 3 to 4 years of the contract that had not been included. And so they're
for the Veterans Cemetery?
Yeah. For the Veterans Cemetery.
Oh God, she got me now. You're kidding. I'm gonna kill you. So how much more is this project now?
$30,000. It's already included.
Already included. Okay,
$300 billion.
Oh yeah, right. I read that. Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 177.
Move it.
Second.
Radio.
Discussion. So I would just say, for, I'm not sure who's handling this now, but I really think we should be looking into, for this budget, to hire a full-time radio technician for the county. I can't be more serious about this. I mean, this is really, we paid out in 2022, $462,181 to NICOMCO. Of that is not all equipment. I have to believe that it would be far cheaper for us to have an in-house technician servicing all of our radios than consistently paying this company hundreds of thousands of dollars. I really would ask that the executive office explore that option. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. So carried. 178, can I have a motion? Motion, 78.
I'll move it.
Second.
We're all putting our pages.
Second?
I'll second.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 179?
I'll move it.
Second?
I'll second.
Second. Okay, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 181?
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
I have a question. Did I get my response? This is about the lighting at the...
I just sent you sitting next to her while we were sitting here. Sorry.
Yeah. All right. I'll take a look.
What 181?
Yeah. So you're replacing the. I just want to make sure this is the right one, right? Yeah. The Belleville Court lighting retrofit. So I got a call from our county supervisor requesting that the county puts the same. Through the planning department, the same requirements on the county that they put on the towns when they come through the planning board, because they have a very strict, you know, requirements or suggestions, because the planning board isn't binding, but they go back to the towns each time and say, no, the light's got to be this, light's got to be that, light's got to be this. He was kind of being facetious, I think, in his request, but I just want to make sure that we are at least holding ourselves to the same standards that we would to towns that come before the planning board.
Why would we start now?
Yeah.
If I may, this is an interior lighting project, so I assume that he's citing complaints about the exterior lighting.
Well, he said it was exterior parking lot. This is not that?
No, this okay. is interior lighting.
Are we doing parking lot?
Not under this contract.
Are we doing parking lot?
We have done replacements for LED lighting at all the parking lots. However, I can discuss with Buildings and Grounds, because I've often noticed that some are also tilted up and are not in their cutoff position. So.
Okay, thank you very much. Sorry.
No. Okay. Well, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 183. The motion.
I'll move it.
Second. Second.
I'll second.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? Carried. 184.
I'll move it.
Second. Second.
I'll second.
Second. Discussion.
Order.
I'll just say that these are from the replacing from 2008. So it's very good that we're doing this.
All those in favor? Opposed? Carried. 186.
I'll move it.
Second. Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? Carried. 188. Good motion.
Move it.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Carried. 190.
I'll move it.
Second. Second. Second.
I'll second it.
Second. Thank you. Fuel discussion.
Oh,
all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 192.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Gosh, take one. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 194.
I'll move it.
Second.
Ken will second it.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Carried. 195. Your motion?
Moved it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Carried. 197.
Move it.
Second. Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 199.
Move it for discussion.
Second.
I'll second.
Discussion? Mr. Walker?
Yeah. So I love this idea of making sure that, or working with farms to provide CSA shares to individuals. I just feel like there are some things in this that need a little bit more hashing out and clarification. It looks like it would come to about 133 shares, how that gets determined, the geographic spread, how do we identify. I'm also, there's a large amount that's an administrative, like half of it's an administrative cost, so just clarifying with that. I would like to be able to go back to the sponsor and just ask her to flush out some of those things, so I'm going to just request a postponement.
I'll make the motion we postpone for a week.
That sounds good for now. Thank you.
Yeah, and yeah, I'll second, but it further, you know, I agree. You know, went to our committee, we had some questions, too, that I wasn't real 100% comfortable getting answered in our committee as well. You know, one of the things is the ability for the CSAs to provide, you know, for what they want to do here. Is there enough? Are there enough CSAs in the county to support this, right? Anyway.
Yeah. I think it's... Now, can I just add, I mean, I don't know, Legislator Nolan, the status of the resolution way long ago where somebody was going to be working with the different farms, but it seems like these two could be tied in together, because if anyone knows where the farms are, who could handle this, how to distribute this in a way that's geographically smart and otherwise, until, you know, where do these shares, do they go there, are these shares going to be delivered somewhere, but it would be great to connect it with that resolution, I think.
Yeah, it didn't happen until after the resolution came to the Public Works, but Legislator Sperry and I did discuss that, and both of us feel it would be very, it would be completely appropriate for the new agricultural food manager to manage this program if it goes forward. And I haven't had a chance yet to connect with her about some of the how to work that all out, but I can understand why you think that maybe it needs to have a little more fleshing out before we adopt it.
Great. I do love it.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's the right thing, but it might be made better. Sorry.
No.
A little coda there.
May I?
Oh, I just had a question regarding the role of the Department of Planning in this project. I'm just wondering if we could...
Yes, and I wish I could speak more fully, but this should not be Department of Planning. I think we made that correction in committee. It's the Department of Economic Development because of where the agricultural food manager is. And did we make that in committee? Or
no.
Did
no.
I guess I wonder also, I mean, to me, I could see this connecting with DSS and being Health, Human Services, and Housing because this is that's the group of people who would need to know about it somehow and get access to that food. So I don't know, Kathy, if you would consider bringing that back also.
I'm a co-sponsor.
Because, you are? Good, good.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, again, that's who knows the people who need it.
Yeah. I was going to say, I love CSAs, and I didn't catch all that because I was, but I think that the food pantries already established would be a great place for this to
get to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like if this is what you were saying, you know, they know who the families are that are in need. It's where they're already going when they're facing food insecurity, and predominantly they get canned and frozen items where this would be a fresh vegetable fruit item. I'm a huge proponent of CSAs. I think that it helps the farmers and it helps the people as well. So,
yeah, I'm to answer Deputy Executive, my understanding was that
county executive initially wanted planning, but now there's some discussion about where to put it. I think in a week, in talking with the co-sponsor, one of the things that we're going to need to get to the bottom of, in talking to the co-sponsor, but also talking to the executive side of the house, is how realistic it is that this would actually be implemented this year. You know, the CSAs are already, some of them are already closed. You know, they've already, they're already determining their purchasing power. The other thing that I just want to bring up, because I think it's going to be really critically important that we get this fully crafted for 2024 budget so that it's fully implemented and ready to go for 2024. But one of the things that, you know, I felt is also really important in this is not just getting the food to the people who need it, but finding and navigating a way of getting the people to the farms as well. Not necessarily on every week, but for a rural county, we have people in this county who have never been to a farm, who have never picked a tomato. And so we want to, and that's one of the things in talking to the farms, when I did that many months ago, some of the young farmers group, they're very open to navigating ways to really expand their membership and sharing the abundance of the actual farm. Almost every CSA has a program where people come to the farm to pick vegetables and to cut flowers, etc. So we need to think that through as well. But we'll be back in a week.
And if I'd also like to remind folks that there is a ARPA-funded food resilience emergency feeding initiative that has been kicked off, where the emergency food providers for the county are being convened to talk about what the needs are and distribution and things like that. I think that maybe some additional discussion around what and how this could be delivered, taking into account like legislator Ron's comments about food pantries also. So I think we could talk about it a little bit more because we're doing a lot of work kind of around this and before kind of creating a new effort as a different department. I think we should look at all the resources.
If I may also, the idea really is for it to be a sustainable policy that isn't a one-time, you know, a one-time hit, that is something that year over year that we, the county, are helping the farmers, but the farmers are helping feed our constituents fresh and healthy food grown locally. So it's a win.
Thank you. As someone who worked at CSA Farms for many years, Chair Botel is exactly right. It's probably too late to implement this for spring summer CSAs. I might recommend having a pilot for fall CSAs and prepare to flesh the whole thing out for budget time for next year. I'm excited to see what Deputy Executive Val is talking about, what we've been discussing in this body around more and more food initiatives. Food and agriculture is a county purpose. I'm not sure if Legislator Lips might be about to say what I was going to credit him to, and I'm excited to work with you, but I'll let you say it if you're going to say it. But that's what I had to say.
I was just going to say I was hoping to see meat in the resolution.
Okay.
Where's the beef kind of thing?
Oh, I know where the beef is. I saw it before I came here.
Any other discussion?
Just a closing comment that this did come up. It was at economic development that the mechanism is that this would go to food pantries and through them to families and individuals. So the idea, as I understood it, was that there would be kind of a consultant who would help to connect the CSAs with food pantries as they are distributed across the county to make sure that all the money invested gets distributed fairly across the county.
That's your one.
It doesn't say that.
It's not. That's not a defined mechanism.
One proposal.
It just says to ensure each share being distributed to individuals and families facing food insecurity.
Yeah,
it doesn't say how.
To the specifics. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I mean, that is something certainly that we contemplated. It's a part of. We wanted to allow
some latitude, because again, we want to allow some people potentially to go and pick them up or whatever.
So we're convening right now Ulster County, you know, emergency feeding network. So I think that figuring out, you know, talking to them how it would work, and doing maybe a little bit more work in program development with thoughts of maybe even a pilot program. At a farmer's market where folks could pick up at the market or something like that. You know, also thinking about education, about cooking, like what, you know, CCE does as far as teaching folks how to eat vegetables or, you know, cook meat that they're less familiar with, things like that. You could really wrap it into something.
Yeah. And also just... One last ARPA project that's been hanging out there, but there's a lot of support for, is the idea of two community kitchens, one decidedly in the south of the county and one in the north. And, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, I mean, we think of community, I think people often think of community kitchens as being analogous to soup kitchens, but it's also a place to do exactly what Amanda's talking about. It's a place to provide classes, and also it's a business incubator, because places that are production but don't have commercial kitchens can rent space with commercial approval in order to manufacture the jar of their jam, to make their sauce, et cetera, et cetera. So it has this multifactorial in it, and hopefully if we can get that moving this year through ARPA, that'll also be yet another connector for projects like this and what that other ARPA project is focused on.
All right. All those in favor?
Postponement, right?
All right. It's been a while since then, so I just wanted to put it out there.
Postpone. We might have to postpone it 8 days.
Opposed? So carried. All right. 202. Second.
Brian, in a couple of minutes, we're going to be to, like, you know, instead of a week, it'll be 6 days.
Resolution 202, I have a motion. Second.
Second.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 203.
Move it.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 204.
Move it.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 206.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 207.
Move it.
Second.
Second.
Giving him a chance.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 208.
Move it.
Second.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 210.
Move it.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 212.
Move it.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 213.
Move it.
Second.
Second.
Chair Burton.
So Amber's waited all this time, and Amber did a lot of work with me. I feel
now you tell.
I'm going to. I'm not expecting that this is going to move tonight. This, like I said, if Amber.
It's a good thing Amber stayed then.
But I do want to open the conversation. I know that the comptroller said that she's going to bring forward comments, and I hope that the executive's office will bring forward comments. This is something that I think is necessary. Something that we came across in the budget in last year's budget process early, with this distinction between restricted, unrestricted, assigned, unassigned, et cetera. And so I think it's pretty critical that we make the changes. We can answer questions now if anyone's got them, or if anyone wants to take, I don't know, it's now so late. Like, if people want to take more time and get back to us between now and next week, that would be great. We're happy to answer any questions that you have.
I make a motion to postpone for a week.
Sorry.
Well, let me get a second on that. Okay.
You got a second.
I will not second.
We've had discussions in the past, and moving to a stronger and higher threshold, 5-10 is way too low, especially for a county our size. So I don't think we're going to have an issue. So we'll follow up with Amber if there's any questions, but I think we'll be supportive. I'll just have to talk to the executive.
Of course.
Yeah. but it looks good.
Thank you.
All those in favor on the bus comment?
Aye.
Aye.
So carried. 214.
A little bit for discussion.
Second for discussion.
Discussion. Chair Bartels.
So this one I'm going to ask for a week. I mean, I can ask some questions now, but we, again, our finance team identified the unassigned fund balance that moniker in the language, but also we're curious about the accurately reflecting the employee benefits. They're using different percentages than our team is used to using, so maybe between now and next week, rather than spend it now, we can get our finance, your finance. And if there's amendments that need to be made, we'll make them between now and then.
Okay.
That'd be great.
Is that a motion to postpone?
It's a motion to postpone 1 week.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Carried. 215.
One more bit.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Oh, sorry. I didn't
Sorry.
Didn't you hear, oh, here we go?
No.
Oh, yeah, 215. Well, sorry. I, okay, yes, I would like to speak. Although, this is nice, they like, so, this is a, never mind. We had a meeting with budget today, and so I'd like probably just the other week to have a discussion about this. The executive's office has some concerns. I feel strongly about a lot of this, but I want to work on some of the new ones. So
I move we postpone it a week.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. There's a forthcoming resolutions as listed. Controller Gallagher.
Bless you.
You just sent us an email.
Does anybody want to make a motion to adjourn?
Oh, so moved.
All those in favor?
Still there.
It's right up there.